From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour could have been made in many places, but we'll go back to 1936 when a British health activist named Norman Walker published his first book about what we eat called Raw Vegetable Juices, What's Missing in Your Body. Walker believed that human beings eat far too many dairy products, and he stressed a kind of eating regimen we'd call vegan. Walker would publish a number of other books, and he lived to the age of 99. And Norman Walker was so influential in the field of juicing that one of the first products designed for the purpose was named for him, the Norwalk Juicer. You can still find it today. It's January, of course, and with the holidays behind us, many people are looking for ways to lose weight, get healthy. Some are turning to juice cleanses, a strict approach that can last from a day to 3 days, 3 weeks, designed to clear out the body from all the junk we've been accumulating. Gwyneth Paltrow even pushes the Clean program, for example. A 3-week supply costs $425. Maybe you've tried the Blueprint, the Life Juice, the Master Cleanse, or Organic Avenue. Maybe you've done a simple juice cleanse through a local business. Well, do cleanses work? What if you want to improve your health through a more permanent diet? What if you want to go plant-based? What are the kind of changes that you can make that really would impact your health? Maybe if you've cleansed, and I have, by the way, we can talk about it this hour. I'd love to hear from you. You can call the program, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. And we have a panel with diverse backgrounds that will help us on these issues in many ways. And I'll go around the table, starting to my left, listening. Left or right doesn't matter to you, but Damaris Pinedo is here. She's the owner of Just Juice for Life on Park Avenue and a former cytotechnologist at Strong. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
A little closer to the microphone, Damaris. Thank you. Tell me what a cytotechnologist is.
So a cytotechnologist screens using a microscope for cancer and other infectious diseases. They also screen pap smears, which women usually get on a yearly basis.
And Just Juice for Life is on Park Avenue. You've been open for how long?
I've had that location for a year and a half, but I've had a food truck. It'll be my fourth year that I participate in the Brighton Farmers Market.
Very good. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Dr. Vicky Shao is here. She's a UR medicine endocrinologist. Dr. Shao, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also here is Rachel Reeves, a UR medicine dietitian. Rachel, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Ted Barnett's here. He's the co-coordinator of the Rochester Area Vegan Society, an interventional radiologist at Unity Hospital. And vegan for how long, Dr. Barnett?
24 years.
24
week.
Years. Yeah. So Ted is the kind of guy who has stories to share for people who say, I'd love to do it, but I don't think I can do it. You like to tell people you can.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. In fact, as any good parents, you know, 24 years ago, my wife and I decided to perform an experiment on our children. So, because, you know, back then nobody knew, right? So we read about it and we thought, this sounds like a good idea. So that was, Nathaniel hadn't even been born yet. He's 22 now, and our two other daughters are now 27 and 25, and they've all been vegan for 24 years and loving it. And they refer to themselves as vegangelists.
Vegangelists. Yeah. Well, speaking of vegangelism, starting tonight at 6 p.m. and going for today's Tuesday, 6 Tuesdays.
Correct.
What do you have starting tonight, Dr. Brown?
So we have a course. It's called A Plant-Based Diet, Eating for Happiness and Health. It's a 6-week plant-based nutrition course. It's accredited through the University of Rochester for physicians who wish to get CME credit, so we're excited about that. And it's also open to the general public. In fact, most of the people who attend will be from the general public. We've already got 45 people enrolled for starting now. We've had over 275 people take the course already over the last 6 times we've given it. This is the 7th time, and it's going to be in the Unity Hospital Education Center. If you want interested in enrolling, go to rochesterveg.org. That's rochesterveg.org, and you can click on the enrollment link.
There. Rochesterveg.org. Yes. Right. And again, the cost for the class?
For the general public, it's $125. For physicians to wish to get credit, it's $250.
Let me work back around the table and ask about, we're going to start on cleanses. We're going to talk about juices. I'm the kind of person who I try to make a smoothie at home at least every other day, if not every day, and replace sort of a fatty meal with it. So I'll have kale, carrots. If I were a better person, I'd put more ginger in there. And then some fruit-based stuff, sometimes some orange juice. I know there's some sugar there. But when it comes to the concept of cleanses, Dr. Barnett, first of all, quick thoughts on cleanses themselves. Say they're 1-3 days, whatever they are.
So I'm not a real expert on that. And, we advocate a whole food plant-based diet. If people want to make smoothies, which is whole food, that's fine.
Do you?
Personally, we don't do smoothies, but we have lots of friends who use them. my wife does most of the cooking in our house. pretty much all of it, actually. So, you know, I think it's a great way for people to get fruits and vegetables in. I also think chewing is really useful.
You're a big fan of chewing?
Yeah, big fan of chewing. So, and I know people who have done cleanses have certainly gone out for, you know, inpatient type things out at, True North in California, that type of thing. And for certain medical conditions, it can be extremely helpful. You know, for people who want to make a rapid change. On the other hand, if you just change your diet to a whole food plant-based diet, you're going to get all those benefits. It might take a little bit longer, like a few weeks instead of, you know, a few days. But it's the kind of thing we recommend. It's the kind of thing you can do on a permanent basis. So.
Rachel Reeves is a dietitian. Have you cleansed or do you drink juices, smoothies, etc.?
I did try a cleanse a few years ago when I was a nutrition student as an experiment. So I did a juice cleanse. It lasted about 3 days. It wasn't for me.
why do you say it wasn't for you?
Well,
were you homicidal by the end of it or something?
I did get a little cranky by the afternoon, that's for sure. But typically after I had my first juice, I had a bit of a sugar buzz and then I would crash later. I think from a dietitian's perspective, with the juice cleanse, we're very concerned on if it's mostly fruit in your juice, and that way you're getting a lot of sugar, and if it's a juice without fiber, you're not getting any fiber, which is great. So sometimes the juice cleanses can be giving you too much calories if you're making mostly fruit juice, but at the same time, it can also lead to a really big caloric deficit.
Okay. Let me turn it over to Dr. Vicky Shao. Again, a UR medicine endocrinologist. You ever have juices or smoothies, Dr. Shao?
I actually do not. Mm-hmm. I've never tried a cleanse. I've certainly had a lot of patients ask me about them, and friends too. And I think I take the view of Rachel and Dr. Barnett that it seems like a good idea, and I like the concept of having more vegetables and fruits in the diet, but I think I would prefer something a little bit more sustainable, like a plant-based diet. I guess I also worry because I see a lot of people with diabetes that Rachel is absolutely right, that there is a potential for a very high glucose load. And so it can become actually quite hard to control diabetes during the cleanse. And so I would encourage anyone who is thinking of that to definitely talk to your physician or your dietitian first to say, okay, is this a good idea, and do I need to adjust my diabetes medications while I'm doing this?
Good points, and let me turn it over to Damaris. Again, just juice for life. So, I know among your products and offerings is a cleanse program.
Yes.
So let's talk about your own consumption habits. You're someone who probably drinks juice every day. I mean, it's part of your business. And so you probably are not someone who feels the need to probably, you're almost on a diet or a regular eating regimen.
Right. I also follow a plant-based diet. I don't have any.
Are you a vegan?
Dairy. I do have eggs occasionally.
Okay.
But only from the guy who comes to pick up my organic compost for his chickens. Good. He has about 50 chickens that he comes every day to pick up our compost. So, but only as I need. I feel like juicing is a great way to kind of cleanse your palate. I'm not saying it should be a complete replacement. And I think it's what we offer is a little bit different because of my medical background as well. And I also have some holistic health coaching. I make sure that I kind of conduct a mini health history before too, to know whether, you know, they have different conditions or they're on medication or whether they're pregnant or nursing, of course, you know, they could still have juice, but it would not be something that they could, you know, just live off for a few days. So for cleanses, I feel like it's important to kind of have a mini health history, because when people try to do it at home, they don't know how to balance it out. And especially if they don't have the palate for it yet, they might put a lot more fruit in it and not, you know, have the right ratio. So I'm able to balance it out a way that is a little bit lower glycemic, but definitely palatable, which I think is the issue. People either get turned off by it because it tastes disgusting if they don't have enough fruit in it, or they just don't know what to do. So when they come into the store, they always say, oh my God, yours tastes so much better, which obviously I hope it does since I do it all day long. But I think it's been a great benefit, and I think exactly it should be a jumpstart. I give people a little reference guide of how to transition into a cleanse. I think at least 3 days before, start reducing some dairy and meat, if that's something that they have in their diet normally, and also reduce caffeine, hopefully eliminate it before. That way they don't have that crazy headache when they do. Some people listen, some don't. But I have to say I have an overwhelming response that is a positive response from people. And it usually helps curb their cravings. A lot of the sugar cravings are people that have gotten off of soda, all sorts of things like that. And it just, most people that come to me are looking for a lifestyle change. So they want to move into more a plant-based diet. Maybe not, you know, solely just vegan or vegetarian, but they want to at least include. And my approach is definitely a lot more understanding. I'm not one to be pushy. I think everyone has their own journey and the way they change and make changes in their family's life as well too. And I think if one person starts incorporating this into their lifestyle, they start making more positive choices, because things don't seem as appealing once you kind of cleanse your palate. I always refer back to babies or little children who like everything really bland. It's because their taste buds haven't been overstimulated. But most of us are overstimulated. So I feel like the cleanse kind of helps freshen up and cleanse that palate again. So then now, you know, an apple, or when you do have it, the whole food, which is, I do definitely tell people to eat as many whole foods as possible. The problem is most people aren't. So this is a good way. They don't like vegetables. So this is a great way to get a large quantity in a couple servings. And I always tell people, if they're on a cleanse and if you feel that you feel a little bit weaker, always carry some fruit in your bag with you or some vegetables to snack on. That way, never let yourself, you know, feel dizzy. Everyone's different. There will be metabolized things. So there's a balance, of course,
sure,
and everything, moderation.
And you're talking about people who come to you because they want a lifestyle change.
Yes.
The cleanse is the way to almost shock them, push them into it, a jumping off point. I have to imagine with the lifestyle change, again, you're coming off of, well, a lot of people drink soda, a lot of people, you know, just kind of the worst in the food product world. And so it would be a bit of a shock, but it's a way to maybe spark a change.
Exactly.
I don't know that I did it for the right reason about 5 years ago. I sort of had this stretch that we all do once in a while where you're busy at work and you're not eating well and you know it and you feel it and you're not working out the way you want to and you think that you can just excuse it all because next week I'll do a 3-day cleanse.
Right.
And that'll just make it better. And I think I lost 5 pounds in 3 days and gained it back 3 days later.
Of course. Water weight.
The water weight, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So in terms of just trying to drop a quick weight, that's probably not a very effective way to keep it off, right?
No. When people come in and they say, oh, I want to lose some weight, I said, well, that might be a side, you know, benefit that you might think. And it might just trigger people. When people get excited, they lose a couple pounds to kind of keep going. So if they know they transition off, I give them some recipes to start following, plant-based as well, too, and slowly transitioning foods again. And then that way they could hopefully, especially if it's people who have a large quantity of weight to lose, if you just have a few pounds, it'll probably come right back on. But people who are on a path and they're really trying to get healthy, they can continue with it. And it's just a great incentive.
As long as they don't go back to the junk they were at before.
Exactly. Because, if you do that, obviously.
Because if your cleanse is a 3-day break from sort of a mediocre or worse diet,
right,
you're not going to keep anything off.
No.
Right?
I have a question.
It's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Yes.
So two things. One, can you sort of explain the difference between juicing and making a smoothie?
Of course.
And whether you do both of those or just stick to one. And what would a typical 3 days be like for a patient? How much would you actually be consuming?
Okay. So the difference between a smoothie and a juice, this is a really common question, because a lot of people come in and they want to juice, but they say they juice at home, but they make smoothies, which are great. We offer smoothies at the shop as well, too. We always incorporate in a green in the smoothies as well, too, to kind of help balance things out as well. So smoothies are usually blended in a blender, so the whole food or vegetable is incorporated, and like you said, all the fiber is there as well, which is great, especially for most people who don't consume enough fiber in a day. And then juices, the fiber is extracted, but not all the fiber is extracted. There's still a little bit left over, because I know fiber, of course, helps you, you know, helps with the bowel movements, which is very important. A lot of people have trouble with that, and a lot of times because of their diet as well. So that's great to have the smoothies, but the juices also help with that as well, too, if people are backed up. Usually if they're not used to drinking it, it clears their pipes out. You know, and they don't even have to have a lot. Something that's kind of a little bit sweeter for me would still affect someone who maybe has, you know, the standard American diet and kind of cleanse them out. So a cleanse usually is made up of about 12 ounces. The juice size, excuse me, is 12 ounces, and there's about 6 juices a day. I try to tell people to think about it as a breakfast, lunch, and dinner with 2 little snacks and like a dessert at night. So the first one, people would like me to number them for them, just to, you know, a little bit of structure is helpful. So the first one is kind of to get things going, and I might put a little bit of cayenne pepper or some ginger in there to kind of get the blood flowing. And I have people that come in and they just try a sip or a couple sips of stuff and they could feel it right away. And that's a great benefit of it as well, is that people actually feel it, which makes them excited and makes them feel like they're doing something positive. I just think it's a great kickstart, you know, springboard into healthier decisions. and they drink about, you know, six per day for how many days? Three, 5 days.
Now, I'm sort of an evidence guy, and I, again, having done one of the cleanses myself, the second day I had a pounding headache, probably because I didn't prepare myself well for it. And I think I went to bed at 6:30 at night because I did not want to be awake to face the world because I was scared about what I might do to somebody.
Well, that's good.
And the third day I felt like I could jump out of the gym. I felt light. I felt good. I mean, I'd lost a few pounds, probably water weight, as Damaris said, but I felt good. And I'm sure there's some actual physiological effect, and I'm sure there's some placebo there. But regardless, I started reading, and I'm trying to kind of get into the science of it. Now, Damaris, I think you would probably agree, Catherine Collins is the chief dietitian at St. George's Hospital Medical School in London. She sort of rails against cleanses for the reason that she says, or the sort of people like me had been doing them, which is eat junk for a while, do a cleanse, and then it has a long-lasting effect. You can just go back to it. Her quote is, the concept of a long-lasting detox 3 days. It's just a marketing myth rather than a physiological entity. The idea that an avalanche of vitamins, minerals, and laxatives taken over a 2 to 7 day period can have a long-lasting benefit for someone who returns to their normal diet is a marketing myth. You agree with that?
I do agree with that.
Okay. And so again, Damaris is saying you can't just use it to fix all your diet problems. You got to make some changes. And we're going to get into more of that in a moment. Michael Gershon is a professor of pathology and cell biology at Columbia University's Medical School. He wrote a book about the gut called The Second Brain. And here's what he writes about toxins, because I had all these questions about what toxins actually are. He writes, quote, some of the worst toxins do lodge in our fatty tissues. And to get them out of our bodies, you don't need a cleanse. You would need a lipid solvent, something like turpentine or gasoline, the kind of stuff that would dissolve a candle made of paraffin wax. End quote. Yeah. So he's saying the notion that you're just taking toxins out through a cleanse is overstated, but we see it a lot. So I don't even know how to define what a toxin is, I admit. How do you talk to clients about that?
Well, I feel like usually most people kind of feel the effects of toxins in the system, whether people become ill from it or just have subtle symptoms just like a headache or fatigue and things like that. So it's difficult, I guess, to pinpoint exactly what a toxin is. I mean, there's toxins in the air, there's toxins in some of the stuff that we eat if it's just, you know, produced in a factory, not really made from food. You know, there's all sorts of toxins. I mean, just living and breathing, you're probably, you know, inhaling some toxins. So it's hard to find a balance. You can't completely put yourself in a bubble for it as well.
Dr. Shaw?
I guess so. Strictly speaking, a toxin is a poison to the body, and actually, Dr. Gershon was one of my professors in medical school.
Uh-huh.
So I've heard that about the gut being the second brain, because the gut has a very extensive neural network as well. And so I think he makes a good point that, you know, we all know about the common toxins like arsenic and cyanide and things like that. But the question is, are there other toxins that we gradually accumulate that then can cause damage to health down the road? And so I think it's very hard when people use toxins in a general terms to know exactly what they're referring to, because it's like, well, obviously they're not referring to something as obvious as cyanide, but at the same time, it's like, well, how do you figure out where the toxin's coming from and how it might get stored in the body? So that makes it just very hard to advise people on what's good or how much they can have before it becomes toxic.
Sure, I think if we all agree that if we only ate food from the middle of a grocery store, that we would be accumulating junk in our body that we don't want.
That's what the junk is. Yep.
You know, and so in that mix, maybe there are toxins, et cetera. And I think we probably can also agree that if we ate a vegan diet, a plant-based diet, a diet that consisted of a kind of a rolling combination of quinoas and juices and really kind of raw fruits and vegetables and really good stuff like that, that we would have a lot less of an accumulation in our body of some of the junk that we get from the middle of the grocery store. But Dr. Shao, can we say that you know, a 1 or a 3 or a 7 day cleanse would remove all of those things from our body?
I don't think it's really possible to say that, because, you know, like Damaris was pointing out, is that, you know, you have to find something that's sustainable, that you can't expect something that's so short term to really remove all of the, you know, side effects from an otherwise unhealthy diet. So
I think we're having trouble defining what the word toxin means here. Right. And people throw that word out, and then they don't really, can you name a toxin? Well, not really. I mean, I'm thinking PCBs and DDT, the things that are fat soluble, that are in your fat tissue in your body. And, you know, ironically, when you lose weight, those things get released into your system, right? And so that you can have a higher exposure all of a sudden to something like DDT or PCBs. Mm-hmm. Or, certainly mercury accumulates in your cells. Mm-hmm. But I think you really need to be empirical about this. What is the actual effect of making a drastic change to your diet? In other words, switching to a whole food plant-based diet. And we know that blood pressure comes down. Cholesterol comes down.
Inflammation?
Inflammation is reduced. LDLs, which is a lipid in your blood, comes down. Your risk of developing heart disease goes down. Sometimes even PSA will go down. And a man who's even got the diagnosis of prostate cancer. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but you know, most men will end up having prostate cancer in their life, but most men will not die from it. And therefore, we have to decide who is going to be operated on. And urologists struggle with this. They follow something called the PSA, which is a blood level. And Dean Ornish showed this in 2005, that patients who were undergoing what's called watchful waiting, in other words, we know you have prostate cancer, maybe we'll operate, maybe we won't, let's see what your PSA does over the next year. If you put men on a whole food plant-based diet, their PSA comes down, those men did not need surgery, whereas the men in the control group, a number of them did require surgery because their PSAs were still rising. So that's an empirical result. Why does it work? Well, we're not really sure. We have theories. But, you know, theories are just theories. We know these things work, and maybe it's from toxins, maybe it's from something else. But the important thing is that it works.
Okay. If you want to join the program, we'd love to hear from listeners about what's your diet. Have you gone vegan? Have you tried to go vegan? Dr. Barnett, again, will advise you that you can.
Sure. You've been it for 24 years.
but maybe you want to work towards a more plant-based diet. We'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on juices and smoothies. We had a great question that came in online that we're going to get to. We'll kick it around to the panel about how to make smoothies that are more nutritious and less fruit-based. I don't think fruit's evil, right? It's just we can sort of overload, I think is what we're saying, and probably overload. And I'm sure, Rachel, you were saying that as well.
Yes, absolutely. The thing with smoothies and juices is that it's a great way to pack nutrients into your diet. If you do have trouble with vegetables, of course, we want you to eat more whole fruit and whole vegetables. Whenever you do make a smoothie or a juice that's, you know, more than 50% or mostly fruit in comparison to vegetables, you're having an issue with the high sugar content. So, like Damaris was saying, with her smoothies and juices, she adds in a dark leafy green. She adds in as many vegetables as you can, or even like you were saying, you add in some ginger or some other spices, just so you can get in more nutrients instead of a heavy sugar load with that fruit.
And I see the phone starting to ring, and our wonderful engineer Val is dealing with that. So before I even get to a break, let me get Alan's question on Twitter, which is, does the breakdown of those nutrients in our smoothies and juices cause trouble in terms of the body's ability to absorb? I think what he's actually saying is when you create a smoothie or a juice, as opposed to eating something raw, when you grind it up or juice it, do you lose the nutritional quality in it? Damaris?
I believe with the blending, very minimal. You do because it is heating it a little bit. So anytime you even cook some vegetables, for most vegetables, you start losing some of the nutrients from it. And juicing as well, too, if you use more of the high-speed juicers. But if you use, like, a Norwalk, we have one in our shop, cold-pressed juices, you're able to retain a lot of the nutrients.
Okay. So the answer is it's probably always technically healthiest to eat right raw in terms of any sort of manipulation, but you don't lose everything.
It's very minimal.
Don't feel like if you juice a carrot, you get nothing from the carrot. But Dr. Shao, what would you tell people who have that same kind of question?
I would agree with Damaris. I think there's minimal loss, and a lot of people will have reasons of why they can't eat the whole food. You know, of course, I advocate eating whole foods, and I think it's a very healthy way to improve the diet. But a lot of folks have dental problems. Maybe they have trouble chewing really crunchy things, or maybe they have swallowing issues that they can't swallow really, you know, they can't chew well enough to swallow. And so I think the emphasis is good to just say, vegetables, assuming you don't deep fry them, you know, would be good, even if you do have to cook them.
Dr. Barnett, when it comes to the vegan lifestyle, do you try to eat as raw as much as you can, or is cooking okay?
Cooking's okay, and I think most people should add a little more raw to their diet, but cooking is certainly fine. Just a comment about the difference between smoothies and juices.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, a smoothie is a whole food. Juices, you've extracted the fiber, which is an important nutrient that most of us don't get enough of. I like to think of the bowel as an organic garden. And one of the things that organic gardeners know is you feed the soil, you don't feed the plant. When you're extracting juice out of a fruit or vegetable, you're basically now, that stuff is now going directly into your bloodstream. You're kind of feeding the plant in that case. I like to think of all those bacteria that we're learning more and more about, the microbiome. Mm-hmm. We want to keep them happy. They like to have little places to hide. They like to have all that fiber down there. You know, we want to keep those little guys happy. There's 10 times more cells in your gut, right, than there are in your body, those little bacteria. That represents a lot of DNA, a lot of information. So I think we should think about their well-being.
let me grab a quick call. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Marianne in Rochester, you're first up. Go ahead, Marianne.
Hi. I'm wondering if any of your guests might like to comment on refined sugar and whether they might think that's a toxin.
It's a good question. Sure. I'll start with a hand up over here. Dr. Sure. Barnett?
Okay, I'll hang up.
Sure. I mean, it depends on your definition of a toxin. I certainly am not in favor of refined sugar. But I'm not opposed to carbohydrates. So refined sugar would be considered a simple carbohydrate. And something like a potato or sweet potato squash, that would be considered a complex carbohydrate. Whole grains, even, you know, beans, legumes, they're full of complex carbohydrates. And the analogy I like to use is the difference between a campfire that has got glowing embers in it versus campfire that you keep going by throwing pieces of paper on it that keep flaring up. So what you want to do is you want to think of that food in your gut as the glowing embers that don't absorb quickly. They're sitting there kind of for, you know, all day long. You're absorbing the food, the nutrients slowly, and that means your glucose levels in your blood will stay more stable. And the problem with glucose, a sudden rise in glucose, which happens if you drink orange juice as opposed to eating an orange, is that your glucose suddenly goes up. Now your pancreas produces a lot of insulin because it sees your blood sugar is high. You produce a lot of insulin, and then guess what? All of a sudden there's not enough sugar in your gut anymore, and your glucose goes low, and you become hypoglycemic. And people think they have this condition called hypoglycemia, but really what the problem is they're just eating too many sugary foods. So what I like to do is, you know, think of that glass of orange juice or, you know, the soda or whatever as throwing a fire in a campfire that's gonna throwing a piece of paper on a campfire that's going to just flare up. What you want to do is you kind of add logs that are going to slowly burn all day long. So,
I guess I agree with Dr. Barnett. The one caveat is for most people, yes, absolutely, refined sugars will cause a significant insulin spike. But the majority of people, it don't become hypoglycemic.
Well, that's true. Right.
And so it's actually a topic of debate amongst endocrinologists, whether what we call reactive hypoglycemia is it a precursor to diabetes? Is it a disease in its own right? And so it's hard to say how significant the low blood sugar would be.
Mm-hmm. I forgot we had an endocrinologist on the panel.
That's okay.
Should I get my mouth shut, right?
Yeah, no. He's right in terms of the analogy that these refined sugars do create a spike in sugar. And so that's why we actually advise people with diabetes who are, for example, on insulin, if they have a low blood sugar, that's probably the one time we say, yes, have a refined sugar, because it will correct a medication-induced low blood sugar very quickly.
Sure.
So, I tell all of my patients that the key thing is balance. And, you know, with the holidays over, I don't think it's fair or realistic to say, no, you can't have, you know, a slice of pie. The issue is, you know, make it smaller and then imbalance it with complex carbs and healthy proteins.
All right, before I get back to the phones, let me just ask the dietitian as well. When we talk about sugars, I hear people all the time concerned that they're getting addicted to sugars as well. You know, what do you talk to your patients, your clients, about the notion of refined sugar and the way that our body reacts to it?
I do think, I know me personally, I have a sweet tooth. And so, it's not necessarily, I need to know need to look into the research in regards to the addiction part, but from a behavioral cue, if you're used to having something sweet after lunch and something sweet after dinner every day, when you don't have it, you definitely still feel that craving. And that's where the idea of, you know, limiting your sugars is important, is that it can add a lot of added calories without you realizing it, because you think, you know, a bite here, a bite here, a bite here, and then throughout the day you've added, you know, a few hundred calories just with sweets, and it's mostly sugar, which isn't, you know, a great nutrient.
If you're on the phone, we're coming to you after this short break. Barb, Ray, Joya, you're up next as we talk to our panel about juices, smoothies, plant-based diets, and the changes we can make to make all of us a little healthier. Short break and your phone calls next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, our dialogue on disability focuses on traumatic brain injury. How has the medical field changed in the last 10, 20, 50 years? What's the prognosis and what are the possible outcomes for people who suffer brain injuries? They're much better than they used to be. We get an update on the field. Join the conversation next hour on Connections.
Crime has been growing in New Orleans' most popular neighborhood. Business owners are angry.
We should hold the administration accountable for the failures of not protecting the French Quarter.
And they worry about tourists.
We don't want them to get held up or mugged or stabbed or shot.
Fighting crime in the French Quarter today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me remind you who is here in studio on this great panel on this Tuesday afternoon. Damaris Pinedo is here. She is the owner of Just Juice for Life, and that's a relatively new business on Park Avenue. Also here is Dr. Vicky Shao, a UR Medicine endocrinologist. Rachel Reeves is here. She's a UR Medicine dietitian. And Dr. Ted Barnett's here, the co-coordinator of the Rochester Area Vegan Society and an interventional radiologist at Unity Hospital. We go back to the phones, and Barb in Honey Oil Falls, thanks for calling.
Hi, I just wanted to call in because it was kind of playing into what I did. In 2008, I changed my diet significantly to cut out sugar and eat mostly a plant-based diet. I lost 100 pounds, and I've had it off ever since by maintaining that basically plant-based diet you're talking about.
Give me an example of the kind of plant-based meal you like to make.
Okay, like right now for lunch, I'm having some carrots that I roasted with Chinese five spice and some salmon and a salad.
Okay.
With regular dressing on it. That's a fairly typical lunch for me.
Barb, first of all, congratulations on not only losing 100 pounds, but keeping it off. But what was the hardest part about making that change for you?
Well, letting go of the typical American diet, especially sugar. But I've actually found that it's a lot easier to completely ban it than to try to regulate it, like moderation people talk about. I actually found that I can't moderate at all, so I just don't eat it at all, and now I'm so used to it that I don't even miss it.
Did you have any withdrawal headaches when it came to sugar?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Like, first 2 weeks, tired and a lot of headaches, but definitely worth it in the long run. My numbers, if you will, cholesterol, triglycerides, everything went through the floor. I have numbers comparable to when my doctor says, what, the teenager's numbers.
Yeah, and Barb, well, let me ask you one more quick question. Do you think now if you ate a sugary product, a dessert product, et cetera, would it just be anathema to, I mean, would you not want it? Or if you ate it, would you be concerned you'd eat the whole thing?
I mean, a little of both.
Yeah. I mean,
I'd be afraid that I would want to eat it all.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly I think I've changed my thinking so much in that the price you have to pay for eating those is so clear to me now that it's not even something I want to do. I really like, I think to myself, I'm a size 6 now and I used to be a 24.
Well,
I don't want to go back there.
Dr. Barnett, you've heard these kind of stories before, haven't you?
Yeah.
You've seen them.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
And and all of the impact on her health are the kind of impacts that you said we see.
Yeah. Congratulations. I mean, we know that interventional studies have shown that we can reverse heart disease, we can get arteries to open up, we can get blood pressure to come down, cholesterol to come down. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you guys aware there's a study of people who have lost 30 pounds or more and kept it off for a year or more out of Miriam Hospital at Brown University?
Not aware, but that's a, anybody in the room? We're not aware, but that's a, certainly one for us to look up.
Yeah, I'm in that group, and I've been for 11 years, so that's motivation, too.
Barb, great stuff from you, and again, certainly not a surprise to hear. But before I get to the, some of the other callers, Barb did, and Dr. Barnett, you made an important distinction here. There's a question on changing your diet to prevent disease, mm-hmm. and there's a question on whether you can reverse the onset of disease.
Right.
How do those things interplay?
Well, if you think about this sort of the standard American diet, SAD, and basically it's like hitting yourself in the head with a hammer three times a day, why does it feel so good when you stop? Well, it's because you're putting all these poisons into your body, basically. You're eating food that, you know, we did not evolve to live on. So if you never engage in that kind of behavior, you're going to avoid, you know, many of the diseases that are now facing everybody on the planet. In fact, I just heard that now the majority of deaths worldwide now are from chronic diseases. They're basically self-inflicted. And it's either from food, inactivity, smoking, or alcohol. And we certainly have a lot of control over all of those things. But as far as as far as never getting those diseases, I think there's good population-based evidence that you can avoid those things. If you've already got something that's causing you difficulty, like for example, you have angina, you have heart disease, you may be headed for angioplasty or coronary artery bypass. There's a number of admittedly small studies, but a number of studies that have shown tremendous power in changing by changing people's diet that you can get the arteries to open up and avoid the need for what I would consider drastic intervention. I know some people think it's a drastic intervention to become a vegan, but I think it's a, I think it's a drastic intervention to have your chest split open.
Yeah. Well,
so, yeah.
And Dr. Shao, on that medical side, mm-hmm. same question. When it comes to reversing disease mm-hmm. versus preventing disease.
Yeah. So definitely there's a lot of data from the diabetes standpoint. So in the 90s, there was a nationwide study called the Diabetes Prevention Program, the DPP, that was a multi-center study conducted throughout the United States. And what they randomized people into a group who had just standard of care, and then another group received a medication called metformin, which is still used for treatment of diabetes. And then they had the third group was in the intensive lifestyle modification group. And everybody who was enrolled had a diagnosis of what we might call pre-diabetes. Either they had a high fasting glucose level or their glucose level rose too much after a glucose challenge. And the studies show that over time, the people in the intensive lifestyle group had a much lower rate of progression to diabetes than the people who received either metformin or had just like usual care. So there is evidence that you can actually reverse or clearly slow the progression to diabetes purely through diet and exercise. And a lot of other studies have tried to implement the DPP's intensive lifestyle protocol because that intensive group had, it was very intensive. They met with a dietitian weekly. They actually met with an exercise specialist. They worked towards a goal of 150 minutes of exercise per week. And so in the real world, it's very hard to translate that because not too many of us have the time to meet with a dietitian every week or not to mention the cost of that. And even the programs that try to intervene with a less intensive lifestyle still is showing benefit. Mm-hmm. So I definitely believe in that.
If I could just follow up on that a bit, we really have an emergency on our hands. It's predicted that children born after the year 2000 have a one-third chance of getting diabetes, developing adult-onset mm-hmm. diabetes in their lifetime. And in the minority community, the blacks and Hispanic community, it's expected to be 50% will develop mm-hmm. type 2 diabetes. Okay. So we have a crisis. It's really an emergency. And mm-hmm. we know that this is caused by diet and inactivity. We know that. So the question is, what are we going to do about it? And it's going to take a huge change at a societal level, but it's really important.
I would like to chime in one thing, is that clearly diet and exercise and our lifestyles play a major role. There is also a fair bit of a genetic component to that. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer and say, no, you don't pay attention to diet and exercise, but there is a part that we can't change, our genetic risk of diabetes. Mm-hmm. That being said, there have also been studies that looked at people who have known high-risk genes to develop either diabetes or heart disease, and they've shown that lifestyle intervention will decrease those individuals' risks as well.
If I could just follow up on that's another really good point. You know, we like to use the analogy that genetics loads the gun, but environment pulls the trigger. So there's plenty of people out there who are genetically predisposed to getting diabetes or getting heart disease, and in their native environment, they wouldn't get those diseases, right. Like the Pima Indians, mm-hmm. right, Native Americans, mm-hmm. who we know get, you know, diabetes, they get heart disease, they get gallstones if they go onto a standard American diet. Those things never happened when they were on their native diet.
Right.
So environment is pulling the trigger here.
We have phones loaded up, and this last 10 minutes are going to fly, so let's try to keep it moving. This is Ray in Rochester. Go ahead, Ray.
Hi, I had a question for the guests regarding juicing vegetables and fruits together. I recently read, a fellow who is treating his colon cancer through raw and juicing and plant-based diets. He recommended to not mix vegetables and fruits together, particularly in juices, in the idea that the vegetables make different digestive acids in the gut and the fruits make different ones and they conflict with each other and affect the absorption of each other when they're together being digested. And I was wondering what people thought about that, if that's an actual idea.
Yeah, Ray, thanks for the call. Let me get Damaris and Vicky maybe. But Damaris Pinedo's here. She's the owner of Just Juice for Life. Fruits and vegetables together, not a good marriage?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think it depends. And one thing I really discuss extensively with people is food combining. I think that's really important. So I think that's more when you're eating more of the whole foods. Certain things digest more quickly than others. And when you're juicing, I feel like you should just be drinking the juice and not eating while you're juicing, because then you're kind of slowing down the digestion. And sometimes you create a fermentation process. So I think that's sometimes what the issue can be, certain food combining. It doesn't affect everyone different, you know, the same. So you have to kind of play around. But I think if a green is usually incorporated with everything, it could be easily digested. It's different. Also, sometimes people will complain that if they drink, they complain of like getting gas or something and they're drinking the juice sometimes. And it might be some of the combination for them that affects certain people, but it's also how fast they drink it as well too. You kind of have to take your pace, like eating too quickly too. You don't want to do that. You have to take your time. So even when you drink your juice, you want to kind of savor it.
Dr. Shao, any thoughts on the combination together?
I have to admit, I've never thought about that. I guess I wouldn't see how mixing it would be a problem.
Anybody else? Rachel?
I don't see where mixing it would be a problem either. I think the caller mentioned a change in the acidic environment. Right. I was thinking maybe the alkaline ash diet that was thought to prevent. Decades ago, there's been a theory about an alkaline ash diet and how eating more basic foods and foods that are less acidic, which is a plant-based diet, could treat cancer. But it's really been debunked. Granted, a whole food diet with lots of fruits and vegetables is certainly beneficial and can prevent cancer. But as a treatment for it, in regards to actually reducing the size of the tumor, I'm completely unaware of combining the fruits and vegetables and having it affect that.
Anybody else? Well, it's an interesting question from the caller. And we both basically always emphasize keep things really simple. You don't have to really worry about food combining. I mean, there are some finer points, but eat whole foods, plant-based, and you're going to do fine.
I am going to get back to the phones on Twitter. Mary Beth wants to know what the panel's opinion is on products marketed as food substitutes like Shakeology or Plexus that are protein and vitamins. Do we know what they are? I don't know what those are.
I'm not familiar with those particular brand names, but generally speaking, I do not recommend any supplements or any food substitutes. Just stick with whole food.
Eat real food.
There's a huge industry, billions and billions of dollars, and people will say anything to sell their product, as you know. So
I agree.
Anybody else?
I completely agree. I was going to say, I mean, that's why I feel so good about what I do, because it's literally fruits and vegetables.
Right.
So there's no gimmick behind that.
Okay. This is, we go back to the phones. This is Joya in Rochester. Go ahead, Joya.
Hi, yes. I love the program, Evan. I just have a comment that went with Dr. Demiris at the beginning of the program when she said that juicing, people can just instantly feel the difference. And I have been trying to cut down on my processed food for over a year now, and I know I can vouch for that. My skin, my nails, my mood are all linked to the food I eat, and when I don't eat what I need or, like, the proper things, I can definitely feel it. It shows through my attitude or, you know, through acne. So I really think if anybody out there is thinking about juicing, it's great as just a baseline just to get an idea of, like, what your body normally feels, like, how you normally feel.
Joy, I think it's well said, and I think I'm sure Damaris wants to follow up there. It's a nice endorsement of some of the comments you've made. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's one of the best things for me. It's just kind of being able to figure out what your body really needs. I think there's certain nutrients that our body naturally craves. Our body doesn't count calories; it counts the nutrients it absorbs. So that's why people can overeat, or they could be overweight, but some people would say they're starving. They still don't have the right nutrients. So it's finding that balance, and I think incorporating juices or smoothies kind of gets you more in tune with what your body and what you feel, and then that way you can make the appropriate decisions, you know, healthier decisions of what you really need to fuel your body and
feel good. Amber on Twitter says, I just learned a new acronym on Connections today, SAD, Standard American Diet.
Yes. It is sad.
And unfortunately for a lot of people, it is kind of sad. Caroline, go ahead, Caroline.
To a little bit different aspect, I would love to see everyone promote recess and grammar schools.
Yes.
Gym three times a week if possible, but recess every single day with active...
That was my favorite subject.
Active exercise. And so that's where kids start packing on the pounds is in the early grades. And School 12, where my granddaughter goes, they have a program list. She took Zumba as a kindergartner, and up to sixth grade, the kids loved it. And that's what we need. It doesn't have to be necessarily a formal gym program, but it needs to be activity. And then you wonder why kids are getting fat, and diabetes in early age. It's I lost 20 pounds, and I was no longer pre-diabetic.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's
I'm sorry, Carol. I didn't mean to cut you off. We're starting to run out of time. Go ahead, Rachel.
But I think that's a terrific point that she made, is that it's not as much of it is diet, a lot of it's activity and lifestyle changes just to be more active every day.
Well, and Rachel, again, as a dietitian, we've been talking about cleanses, but you think of a kitchen cleanse as an idea. What's the idea behind a kitchen cleanse?
Yeah, so for some folks, having a juice cleanse is not going to be a strategy that works for them. It's just something that they're not interested in. But think about cleansing your kitchen. What's in my kitchen cupboards right now that is really processed? It's high in sodium. It's higher in saturated fat. You know, anything from that middle aisle, kind of in the middle grocery store aisles, what were we thinking about? See if you can remove those, and where can you add in whole food, shopping through the perimeter of the store? So more fruits, more vegetables, more whole grains. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing. So if you're not ready for an internal cleanse, think about an external cleanse. What am I actually buying?
Also, and I've got 2 minutes, so a couple quick comments here and questions for our panel. Dr. Barnett, again, with the Rochester Area Vegan Society. Here's an article in Slate.com, what your organic market doesn't want you to know, the dark truth about quinoa. I love quinoa.
Right.
And what they're saying is, as the price has risen, so they grow it in places like Bolivia, but people used to eat it there. Now, it's being sold, it's being grown in impoverished places, it's being sold elsewhere, and the people in impoverished places are eating junk food instead of the good stuff that they are growing, and we should all feel badly about that. I mean, they're raising the point. What
right.
do you say?
Well, I think you need to put that all in a global context, which is that the arable land on the planet is being converted into an animal agriculture machine. And most of the grains on the planet, quinoa is an exception, most grains on the planet are fed to animals, which are then fed to humans. So to blame a healthy product like quinoa and somehow say, well, this is why you should never be vegan, to me is just insanity. When we're cutting down rainforests mm-hmm. to grow soy and corn to for the benefit of animal agriculture, I just think it's a straw man.
Okay, well, I think the panel sort of agrees, and as we start to wrap up here, the panel sort of agrees on a number of things here. Number one, we move towards a better real food, raw food diet is good in so many ways. Cleanses aren't going to fix all of your problems. Maybe they'll shock you into making longer-term changes, but it only works if we make a permanent change. Damaris Pinedo, remind people where you are. Where is Just Juice for Life?
I'm at 713 Park Ave. It's between Berkeley and Culver.
And it's great to hear about what you're doing. Dr. Barnett, you got a big event tonight. What's going on Tuesday, six Tuesdays? What's going on?
Right. So tonight we have the beginning of our plant-based nutrition course at Unity Hospital. If you're interested in enrolling, go to rochesterveg.org. And I like to, I'm a high-tech doctor. I'm an interventional radiologist, but I like to call myself a high-tech doctor with low-tech solutions. So we'll learn about how to eat plants tonight at check out rochesterveg.org.
Rochesterveg.org, and you can register there. Have fun with that. Thank you.
Thanks
again for being
appreciate
here.
It.
Really appreciate that. Damaris, nice to meet you in person. Thank you for being in studio. Dr. Shao, didn't get paged. We're so thrilled you spent the whole hour with us. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having
me. As a UR Medicine endocrinologist and Rachel Reeves, a UR Medicine dietitian. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
Great stuff. A short break, and the dialogue on disability continues next hour on Connections.